From WSLR, LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota, and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, this is Johannes Werner with your WSLR news headlines for Wednesday, December 18th. Plans to build a $1.3 billion baseball stadium for the Tampa Bay Rays near downtown St. Petersburg might be back on track after weeks of turmoil. In a 5-2 vote yesterday, the Pinellas County Commission approved bonds to pay the county's $312 million share of the stadium. Just before the November 5th election, the county commission threw the plans into turmoil when it postponed the vote until after the election. The outcome of today's vote was not foretold, given that sitting and new commissioners had expressed skepticism about the deal. Last week, the City of St. Petersburg Commission voted to uphold their part of the financial deal. However, the Rays themselves have yet to signal that they are still interested. The Colson Hotel's future seems to be secured after a local business arranged a public-private deal. The decaying building near downtown Sarasota has a 100-year history as a refuge for African-American travelers during the segregation era. A developer who wanted to tear down the Colson to build luxury townhomes agreed to sell the historic preservation easement on the property in the Rosemary District for $700,000 to Dream Large and the Sarasota Alliance for Historic Preservation. Dream Large is the parent company of Sarasota Magazine. Also involved in the deal are the City of Sarasota, the Gulf Coast Community Foundation, and a newly established Community Development Corporation. That Community Development Corporation is made up of local leaders, including Dream Large owner Anand Paligar. The Rosemary District, once known as Overtown, used to be a hub of African American life and culture in Sarasota. Today, it is a hotspot of luxury construction. Maximilian Vollmer, the developer, initially asked for a demolition permit for the Colson, which the city denied. The buyers are now seeking community input on how to use the Colson. The expanded emergency room at the Sarasota Memorial Hospital Venice campus opened on Monday. The $90 million, 30,000 square foot expansion boosts the number of exam rooms from 28 to 61, adds two resuscitation suites, and upgrades imaging facilities. The hospital's Venice campus reached full capacity just days after it opened in 2021. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Wednesday, December 18th.
Good morning. This is the Peace and Justice Report. I'm Tom Walker. With me is Lisa Reese, I think one of her first times on the board, and she's also a new programmer. She has a program coming up this Friday at 2 p.m. Lisa, good morning, and what's that program about?
Good morning, Tom. The program is going to be called Just Fusion.
So Just Fusion. Fusion, yeah. Jazz, right?
Fusion Jazz. I am very, very excited to start the program, and I think our audience is going to love it.
Okay. Well, wonderful. And thanks for your help on the board. Remember, though, that the opinions you hear on this show are our own or those of our guests, and not necessarily those of WSLR's board, its employees, or volunteers. Our guest today is Robert Kramer. He's the author of Nuts and Bolts, The Formula for Progressive Electoral Success. His firm, Democracy Partners, works with progressive electoral and issue campaigns and has 34 partners located throughout the United States. And Bob has also been a progressive strategist and political organizer for the last 50 years. He was our guest in October, and we thought it would be good to have him back and talk about the recent elections. So good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Tom. Good to be with you.
Thank you so much. Election didn't go so well for us progressives. How about giving us your analysis of the election?
Well, it didn't. And I will say that contrary to the Trump narrative, it was not a landslide.
No.
We lost all seven swing states for president, but very narrowly in each case. And but the fundamental issue, in my judgment, Tom, is that people, large numbers of Americans, even though the economy is pretty good worldwide, I mean, for here in the United States compared to the rest of the world, thought they were not getting ahead like their parents or grandparents, that their kids were not getting ahead. And you couldn't say, oh, the economy is good. They'd say, you're just out of touch. The economy is my economy.
Right.
68% of the people who voted said the economy was not good or poor, according to the exit polls. 73% were dissatisfied or angry at the direction of the country. That's a heck of a headwind. And for an incumbent. And the reason is very simple. Even though we have the richest country in the world at its richest time in history, which sounds like a real contradiction for that kind of situation, it's because since about the mid-70s, there's been increasing income inequality in the United States. And that's really a killer. And that's where we've got to go as progressives. If we want to convince ordinary people that together we can fight for them, it's about fighting for them. Not about ideology and not about, you know, are we fighting for them? And of course, the reason is, and as I say, I mean, you know, there's been a 70% increase in hourly, in productivity in the United States per hour in the last 40 years, and less than 12% increase in income for ordinary people. At the same time, for the top 1%, there was 158% increase in income. For the top 0.1%, 341% increase in income. So you get average CEOs making 399 times what the ordinary their workers make. I mean, that's the fundamental underlying issue that we have to address if we're going to be fighting for working people in America.
Yes, and I believe as you pointed out, Trump did not. It was a close election. Trump did not even get a majority of the votes. He got a plurality, and at about just a few hundred thousand votes less more than we did. One thing that we heard was that. That we abandoned the traditional working class, and that's—I believe—that's what you said.
Yeah.
We instead catered to a highly professional, educated elite. How could we turn that around?
Well, that's actually the perception. I mean, let's be clear: Donald Trump is fundamentally—he and his gang of
billionaires—are
the problem. Yeah. I mean, and I think I'll tell you how we turn it around. I mean, the first thing we have to do is to lead with economics and with a very populist frame. That is, you can't just say, oh, we've got to increase incomes for ordinary people, or we got to reduce prices. You got to name the perpetrator that caused the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Every narrative has an antagonist and a protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
And in this narrative, it should be Trump and the billionaires that surround him in huge numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And on the one hand, as the antagonist and the protagonist is ordinary people and all of us in the progressive movement working together to, you know, to get the fair share for ordinary folks. That's got to be talked about front and center, and we've got to be fighting for those people. You know, I talked to Ruben Gallego the other day,
mm-hmm.
you know, won the Senate race in Arizona,
mm-hmm.
and see, you know, we're not, it's not just, it's not about ideology. It's about who's fighting for me. And that's the message we have to communicate more than anything else. Not that things are better than you think, but we're fighting for you.
They think Trump's fighting for them?
Okay. Now, a lot of them think, oh yeah, a lot of them think that the system's not working and Trump will blow it up.
That's right. And that's,
you know, and we have to disabuse them of that. Now, there are a lot of people, particularly in the labor movement, who understand that's not true. But we got to demonstrate that clearly in the battles ahead. we're going to have a bunch of battles coming up here that are going to demonstrate that just front and center. Mm-hmm. The battle over the tax proposal that he's going to propose more tax breaks for billionaires and millionaires.
Right.
We got to really be clear on that and just go to the mat about it. The battle to prevent. He's going to try and take away our health care through the ACA and other and cut Medicare and Medicaid. I mean, we've got to be front and boy, make that absolutely hands off our health care. And we've got to be fighting for the things that ordinary people care most about.
And how do we get that message out? And, a lot of voters don't necessarily read the New York Times like I do. They don't come anywhere close. What vehicle do you use to reach the masses of the people, especially these working-class voters, young men, the voters without college degrees, Hispanic voters? What's the best way to reach them?
Well, I'd say there are two answers to that. One is trusted messengers like you.
Mm-hmm.
Trusted messengers who reach people on the radio, online, who are, there is a media problem we have. Lots of people live in a media bubble of Fox News and so forth. The elimination of local press has been a big problem. We've got to do our best to really focus on providing the resources and opportunities for voices that are progressive voices that are also trusted by working people to be heard online and radio. Particularly, I think are particularly good vehicles. Second thing is round year-round organizing.
Right.
The best place, of course, is the labor movement. We have right now. There's only 11.3% of the workforce is part of the union. It used to be 33% back in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons we have so much more income inequality. But we've got to really support building unions. And I would argue that the Democratic Party, there ought to be a precinct coordinator in every precinct in America that knows the voters with a whole bunch of volunteers that work with them. And they know who the mobilizable voters are and the persuadable voters, knows what people care about because he knows the people in her precinct. And that kind of building organization, local organization, I think is hugely important. The Democratic Party can't be seen as something from the coasts or from, the outside. It has to be in our community.
Well, that was a question about the campaign. Who was it that had the 50-state campaign?
Howard Dean.
Howard Dean, that's right. And that they've kind of left that behind. They concentrated just on the swing states here's one criticism I heard going around Republican who was she?
Oh, Liz Cheney.
Yes, Liz Cheney. I was just on a cruise with some pundits. They said instead of going around and seeking out moderate Republicans or former Republicans, instead of touring with her, she should have been touring with more progressive people.
With people like Sean Fain.
Yes.
President of the UAW. No, I think there is at the end of the campaign, there was not as much emphasis on that kind of populist economic frame that I was talking about earlier that might have been the case. I mean, Kamala stood up for all those principles but didn't communicate about them as much in the end as this kind of message that was geared, as you say, to swing Republican voters. And, I think a case can be made that was not the right choice. I don't think it's helpful for us to be blaming people who worked their hearts out to win that campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, and we had a very good field game from the point of view of lots of people on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's the local year-round organizing.
Okay.
To be working on. Mm-hmm. Going forward, we've just got to understand that we have a problem with America's ordinary working people understanding or believing that Democrats are fighting for them. And that's got to change, and mostly because the way it gets changed is by ordinary people like that becoming leaders in our movement.
Mm-hmm. Well, what can we do to encourage that? I know in Sarasota County, there's a lot of precincts that are they have no chair. We're a shrinking party in that sense. There are a lot of independents, of course. And I think they may outnumber Democrats and Republicans, and they are not interested in being contacted necessarily by a Democratic precinct captain. But you're right. I think presence. Year-round presence is a terrific idea, especially if we're working for economic equality and improvement.
I know Nikki Freed, the chairman of the Democratic Party,
yeah.
is really committed to that notion of year-round organization, and we have to really just focus in right now,
mm-hmm.
on building those kind of organizations, and I hope the next chairman of the Democratic National Committee will be very heavily committed to that. Get some very good people running for it, and that we put a lot of resources into that kind of level of local organization and local trusted messenger development that allows people to feel like they're part of something.
Mm-hmm.
You drive down the street in Cumberland, Maryland. There's a big bar, big building.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Democratic Club, and it is. It's for Democrats, and it's like I say, it's a pub. People come there and socialize. On a sense that the Democratic Party is us, not them,
mm-hmm.
and that's all about organizing.
Who do you favor for the new chair of the DNC? Ken Martin, Ben Wickler?
Well, both those guys are terrific. On our progressive mobilization calls that we run every week, a couple of times, we're having all the chair candidates. Had O'Malley Monday. I think tomorrow we've got Ben and Ken. They're both wonderful. I know Ben for many years as one of the best organizers in America. And there are a couple of new up-and-coming candidates as well. But whoever it is has to be an organizer, not just a voice, not just a spokesman, but an organizer,
mm-hmm.
whose goal is to build organization and empower people.
We're talking to Robert Kramer, the author of Nuts and Bolts, The Formula for Progressive Electoral Success. Okay, so since we didn't succeed, what did they not do that your book says to do?
Well, I think the main thing has to do with the messaging on economics that I'm talking about.
Okay.
But this other question of organizing year-round and creating trusted local messengers is equally important. I mean, it's difficult in the face of a lot of people believing that they're not doing well economically. And the numbers I gave at the beginning of the call having to do with the people saying the economy's not, and the country's not going in the right direction. That's an anti-incumbent situation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Donald Trump's going to face the same problem in 2026.
That's right. That's right.
And, the wins on the incumbency are going to be at our back, not his.
That's right.
And that's a big plus. I'm not a believer that it was inevitable we'd lose. I think more focus on local organizing more message changes could actually have potentially moved the number of voters in question, which is not very large. But then again, you know, I don't want to blame Kamala or her folks for that. I mean, it's just not helpful. I mean, to analyze what we can do going forward seems to me to be the right approach. Because unity is critical going forward. We have to be unified. Democrats and progressives need to be unified in our efforts to protect people from Donald Trump and to project the kind of vision we have for the future.
Did you and your firm do any consulting of this cycle? And
my colleague Heather Booth was head of progressive engagement for the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
One of our partners was head of youth engagement for the campaign. We did a good deal of, we had people who did lots of get out the vote operations, you know, field operations. My wife, Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky,
yep,
from Illinois, was part of an effort called Operation Swing State that we had people from Illinois in huge numbers, thousands of shifts, going to Michigan and Wisconsin to knock on doors and so on. And all that is really good.
Yeah.
But it's no substitute for local organization. And that's an issue. You know, Trump, of course, is going to come with this immigration thing.
Yep.
Early on. This mass deportation or whatever. And, he uses immigrants as the antagonist in his narrative. Oh, you're not doing well because immigrants.
Right.
Which is, of course, ridiculous. But progressives have to stand up and say that. It's ridiculous. We're not going to. On the other hand, I think we have to have some solutions in the immigration front that work. I mean, I would suggest, you know, there was an agreement for a whole lot of more resources on the border. One of the things people just don't like is this kind of disorder, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, a lot of resources for immigration courts to resolve asylum claims more quickly and Border Patrol. At the same time, that needs to be coupled with opportunities for Dreamers, as people came here as children, long-time immigrants who've been here with who are dual-status families, which means their spouse is a citizen and they're not, for work permits and status. And of course, down the road, we have to have serious long-term immigration reform. I mean, that allows the pathway to citizenship for the many people who need it and have been here for years.
Hmm.
But, you know, the key thing when it comes to immigration and lots of other things is we have to stand up straight for what we believe, and we have to defend the most vulnerable. At the same time, we make it very clear that we're on the side of ordinary working people and to fight for them and to deliver for them.
The consultants, and you're one of them, of course.
Yep.
But I heard a criticism that they poured a lot of money into TV ads the last few weeks, and they get a third of that revenue. Is that true?
Well, it is true that there is a tendency to put more money into television,
right,
than there is to put money into organizing, and that's partially because consultants make more money on television.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
They do organizing, which is hard work. And that needs to change. I mean, you know, I remember in the early part of the 2000s, there was this talk about how television was the new precinct captain. No, that's not true. I mean,
uh-huh.
It's an important medium to be delivering powerful ads on. But there's nothing beats your neighbor talking to you.
True.
There's nothing beats, you know, making sure that we repeatedly contact folks who are mobilizable voters, that is, who otherwise wouldn't vote, to get them out. It just that's so important.
One thing you pointed out earlier is that, in fact, most of our elections have been swing elections. That is, they swing one way, and then 2 years later, they swing back the other way. And since the margin was so slim, we can expect, you think, gains in the House and the Senate for in 2 years?
Well, I certainly believe that's possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing is inevitable. It's up to us.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely true that, you know, we now have, right now it's 215 to 219 or 220. And, you know, we need to pick up, I think, 3 seats in the House mm-hmm. to take control. It's absolutely doable. Absolutely doable. In the Senate, it'll be a more favorable map for us, slightly, than it was this time. You know, guys like Sherrod Brown in Ohio, who ran ahead of the presidential ticket in Ohio, but, you know, it was just there was too much headwind in Ohio. I think he could win that Senate seat thing vacated by J.D. Vance mm-hmm. In 2 years, and that would be really wonderful if he could, because he's one of the great champions for working people in America.
Is his name again? I didn't catch it.
Sherrod Brown, Senator Sherrod Brown.
Okay.
Who lost in the last cycle. We got a number of Senate seats that we might be able to pick up, you know, and that's that ought to be a heavy, heavy concentration.
Anything different?
You know, one of the things we've been able to do because of the Senate being in Democratic control is to confirm more judges than any president in a presidential term. We've now beat the number that Trump was able to succeed in.
I'm glad to hear that. That's great.
And of course, the real problem would be the Supreme Court. And the control of the Senate's huge in terms of Supreme Court.
I read that that the billionaires who support Trump don't really believe that he will do a mass deportation, which would cripple some of the industries, or that he will do the other extreme things that he uses on the campaign trail, and that they can moderate that. Do you think they feel like they can handle a Trump, and is he able to be handled, if you see what I mean, in terms
who
of...
Knows, right?
Who knows, yeah.
Who knows? The guy, getting in his head is almost impossible. I mean, Trump is a... You know, kind of a loose cannon. There's no doubt about it, and we'll see. I mean, the people he's appointed,
right?
I mean, Lord have mercy. RFK Jr., who believes that the polio vaccine has caused all sorts of deaths, and I mean, Lord have mercy. I mean, you know, those people like me, old guys who grew up with polio. What a wonderful thing the polio vaccine!
Right. Was. I remember my friends in an iron lung.
Yeah.
In the 40s.
I mean, it's absolutely right, Tom. I mean, and you get and people like this this fellow, he's nominated for defense, who's just, you know, really. I mean, women shouldn't be in combat. Hmm? Ask Senator Tammy Duckworth that or something. That's just outrageous. I mean, or Tulsi Gabbard, who has not a clue about the intelligence community, and not a clue, and is going to be, you know, basically Paris Russian talking points. What are they? What's he thinking? It's just beyond belief. Or this fella Patel, who wants to turn the FBI. I don't know. You remember? Back when J. Edgar Hoover was head of the FBI and used it to go after progressives and so on all over the country,
I do
they
remember.
Want to turn it into a KGB or not, or what do they call it? To just go after their enemies. I mean, we can't allow that. That's crazy.
Yeah, but how would you stop it? I mean, the Supreme Court can't step in immediately and stop anything like that.
I'm having a hard time hearing you, buddy.
I'm sorry. The Supreme Court couldn't step in and stop that immediately. How would you stop any extreme measures that Trump might instigate?
Well, we may have to have taken to the streets here.
Oh, okay.
We can't stand by while he does extreme, crazy things and not have vocal, loud, engaged opposition. I mean, as you say, the Supreme Court can't be counted on. As I say, the local courts, the district courts and the courts of appeals are better now than they were 4 years ago because Dick Durbin and the Senate have approved all these Biden nominees, but the Supreme Court's a serious problem and requires serious Supreme Court reform, but we obviously don't have the votes to do that right now. So one of these days, if we have a majority in the Senate and House and a president to Democrat, we're going to have to reform the Supreme Court, particularly the ethic rules that basically allow some of these guys on the Supreme Court to be owned by billionaires.
Yes, yes. Oh, well, a couple more things. Some people think that Harris should have talked a little more about Gaza and distanced herself a little bit further from Biden? Was she too timid in this and other areas? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that would have been a good thing. I think they should have had a Palestinian spokesman for the Democratic National Convention.
Of course.
I think the the president's policies on Gaza is the one big area where I've had a disagreement with the administration, which has done a spectacular job in so many other areas, I want to stress. But I think that did hurt them, particularly with young people and progressives in this last election.
All right, so did they not do anything your book recommends? Sounds like they did everything your book recommends, it's just not enough of it. What do you think?
Well, in a lot of respects, yes. Here's the thing. The quintessential problem of political communication is Maya Angelou's great recommendation. They won't remember what you do. They won't remember what you say. But they'll never forget how you make them feel.
Ooh, I like that.
And we got to make people feel good. And when we're persuading people, you have to make people feel good about themselves. Politics is like a love affair, not like some rational, here are the good points and here are the bad points. When you're in a love affair, the goal is to make the other person feel good about themselves when they're with you.
Mm-hmm.
Not good about you, but about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem we have with working Americans. They don't feel empowered. They don't feel, and that's where we got to go here. It's very hard to do that. I mean, President Biden, first president to walk a picket line for UAW.
That's great.
I mean, he delivered in so many ways for working folks, but the visibility of that fighting for you has to be clearer, and the target of the people want to know why they got this problem, and you got to be naming the names. It's billionaires and millionaires. That's who it is who are taking all the money, and it's fighting price gouging.
Right.
Fighting for competition instead of monopoly power. It's fighting, these giant tech companies. It's doing what you got to do to actually make the economy more democratic. And though this administration did a lot of that stuff, it has to be louder, and we have to be more successful at it.
In the last month or so that we have left in the Biden administration, what should he do as he's leaving to help our cause?
Well, one thing is that the Senate, this is not something he should do, but the Senate ought to do.
Yeah.
Senate needs to stick around right now and or come back a little early and make sure every vacancy that is available that has been nominated gets approved for judges.
Right.
That's one thing. Number two, and I know his agencies are trying to do this, all those eight federal agencies need to solidify their actions as best they can. Get the money out the door that's been obligated to the projects that are critical for America.
Yes, yes, yes.
And get the regulations promulgated in a way that they're as hard to reverse as possible. Just harden ourselves for that. By the way, one thing that would be wonderful, and it's not clear exactly how you do this, but giving a man like Trump the sole launch authority for nuclear weapons is a terrible idea. And to the extent that could be mitigated either by the President of the United States today or between now and the inauguration, declaring that the United States will no longer will forswear first use of nuclear weapons, that would be good.
Mm-hmm.
And make an American policy that he'd then have to come around and reverse, which would be much harder, take other actions to restrict that possibility. It's a terrifying idea, frankly, that Trump should have ability to fire off nuclear weapons if he has a fit. They certainly need on the foreign policy front to do everything they can to try and achieve a ceasefire in Gaza and, some resolutions in the Middle East, although I'm sure Bibi Netanyahu is just wild about Donald Trump. We obviously have to pay, the government has to pass a continuing resolution to prevent a shutdown this weekend, which I think it will. And there are a number of provisions in the continuing resolution that's been proposed that are pretty good things that Democrats have forced into them. Johnson may have, the Speaker of the House may have some opposition from his own party about including those things, but we'll see how that goes in the next couple of days. So that's my current list.
You've looked over the 2050 plan. You probably read the whole thing. It's a long
2025.
I'm sorry, 2025. I haven't read it all yet. But one of the things I worry about the most is replacing civil servants who are basically career people and neutral, and they know their job in the FAA or wherever, with supporters who may not know anything about the job. Or are requiring a loyalty oath, so to speak, to remain. Is there any way to prevent that?
I think most Americans do not want to take a professional civil service, which was one of the great reforms of the last 100 years, and turn it into a patronage army again. I mean, I'm sorry, really. You really want federal civil servants who are to be patronage workers? I think nobody wants that. And I think there'll be an enormous opposition to it, and we just got to do everything we can to stop it. That's crazy.
Yeah, I remember when it was called the civil service back in the 70s. They were my customer for my computer firm, and nice people. But they were career functionaries. They didn't They serve both administrations, all administrations. All right, so where should we go from here? What are you? You're continuing to consult with people, and besides the, you know, every precinct has is working. What else are you advising people to do in the way of messaging, or any? Let's put it this way: any changes in the way. Since the way we did messaging didn't quite succeed, what message changing messages is do you suggest now?
Well, one of the other things I think we're going to have to a couple things. One is we have to realize that, notwithstanding the outcome of the election, most Americans support progressive positions.
There you go.
And in those areas, even in the states where we lost the presidency, we very often won referenda that were supported a progressive position, like freedom of reproductive choice,
sure,
or raising the minimum wage, or whatever. So we have to stand up forcefully for those things. By the way, that includes we should not go down the path of believing that so-called these non-economic issues are somehow problems, like gun violence. There was another shooting just in Madison, Wisconsin.
Right.
Week. Yes. And it's 2 days ago, I guess. It's the common sense gun violence prevention measures are supported by 70%, 80%, 90% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to stand firm for those and fight for those. And a number of these areas, particularly in the state and local areas, I mean, because that's where a lot of our ability to implement them presents itself. That goes for reproductive choice, of course. We're going to have to do everything we can to protect that from the assaults the other side has. The same is true with climate. And there has to be, I think, a heavy emphasis for progressives on the battles at the state and local level, precisely because Donald Trump and the Republicans ultimately control the levers of power in Washington.
Good point.
That's got to be a big focus for, that presents itself as an opportunity to build progressive infrastructure and all of those, and because at the state and local level, people can have the ability to participate more fully and develop their own abilities and skills and power. So we should use that as an opportunity in the next, you know, little bit. Lord knows what all this will bode for foreign policy. and it's, you know, what Trump will do with Ukraine, what Trump will do with the Middle East, what Trump will do with the future of the rest of the world. We certainly want to do everything we can to stay out of a war, but also to stand up for democracy and not, you know, Trump sees himself as a little Putin.
Yeah.
And, you know, he identifies with people like Putin and Viktor Orban, the dictator, in Hungary, he identifies with lots of these right-wing authoritarians. And America doesn't want that.
He's also, I think, slightly non-interventionist in the sense that I get the feeling he wants to quickly settle Ukraine somehow with some territory loss and stay out of other conflicts. Does that sound right to you, or am I reading him wrong? Or is it unknown?
No, I think you're probably right. I mean, that he would like to avoid, and this is not, he's not, he and his, the people around him are not the Dick Cheney's of the world who want to send American troops all over. and that's good. I'm all for that. I'm not doing that. He will also be for, I'm afraid, for trying to do that by making deals with autocrats, and that's a problem for both America's interest and for the interest of ordinary people all around the world who should not be, who need democracy.
Yeah, I get the feeling he likes autocrats. It's like the way he would like to run things himself, and the way he always has as an individual. He would like to run governments the same way, and he admires those people, who strong men, so to speak, who control things in their countries. He's probably jealous of their control of the press and other things.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, he really has a view that, it's all about Donald Trump.
Exactly.
And his power and his status and his, I always thought that Trump's addiction, or Trump's drug of choice, is attention. he wants attention more than anything else.
He'll be able to be manipulated then by the people who realize that. I'm not sure he has enough self awareness to be on the guard against it, so to speak. As he gets older and more senile, he'll be able to be played by either his advisors or by foreign dignitaries.
Absolutely. Yeah. Putin will be able to play him like a fiddle. I completely agree. Because flattery will get you everywhere with Donald Trump, apparently.
Yeah.
And, of course, all these tech billionaires are making pilgrimages to Mar-a-Lago to flatter him and so on. And with the eye of trying to prevent him from doing things that limit their ability to make a lot more money.
Right. Right. Well, I think he made gains among the non-college educated, the Latinos, and what do they think he's going to do for them exactly? He didn't promise them anything, did he?
Well, I think it's true that for all working folks, if you're unhappy with the status quo, he promised to blow things up.
Yep.
He just promised to, we're going to change all this.
Yeah.
And if you're unhappy with the status quo, that means you go with somebody who might want to do that. A lot of people thought, it's a real negative all these things he's going to do to change them. Well, from the point of view of people who really want change, that's a positive. We got to be the change agents in terms of things people want changed. You mentioned Latino voters, and I do think we ought to touch on that.
Yeah.
The Democrats can't take Latino voters for granted. We have to be talking. They care about these economic issues. They care, and we need to be organizing in those communities. I say we. They need to be organizing those communities and teaming up with. We need to help facilitate that, teaming up with all of us. One of the things we got to avoid at absolute certainty is the sense that we need to educate other voters. No. We need to work together to advance the interests of ordinary people all across America. And they need to be, we need to help facilitate the organizing that will allow them to exercise the power that they want to have to have a seat at the table and make things happen in their interests. And, one of the biggest problems we had in this election is the feeling on the part of a lot of people in middle America that folks on the coast or the so-called elites look down on them.
Mm-hmm.
They're disrespected.
Mm-hmm.
And Aretha Franklin was right. It's R-E-S-P-E-C-T. We got to remember that respect is huge for people, and act that way. I mean, like I said, people like the president of steelworkers, boy, he gets at that so well. And John Fain. And those are the kind of voices we need to be lifting up as the next couple of years proceed.
Right, and showing that we respect them and so forth and so forth. But we have to go where they are. They're not reading the papers necessarily. They're not reading New York Times. They're coming, talking to each other on Twitch or all these other new platforms.
Yeah.
How do you I guess we have to figure out how to talk in the media that they're using.
Well, as I say, I mean, I think the two media that we need to really two vehicles we need to really focus heavily on are the internet, are the social media platforms,
mm-hmm.
Where we need to help develop and economically support. Trusted local influencers, messengers.
Okay.
And I think we need to put resources. I sound like I'm making a pitch for your radio station.
That's okay.
Really, I mean, radio, progressive radio that has voices that come from the constituencies we're trying to communicate with. Whether they are African American or Latino or white working class or whatever, we need to have those people as featured, trusted messengers. And you know, it's shocking in many ways that the right came to dominate talk radio during the last 30 years.
It is
the way it did. I mean, you know, it's. That talk radio still is a vehicle that large numbers of people pay attention to, particularly the folks we're talking about. And we've got to really put resources and energy into assuring that it has a multiplicity of voices that are not just aimed at the folks who want kind of more... you know, the highbrow kind of programming, but want to actually have discussions of their lives.
That's a good message for our radio station here. We try, of course, to bring new people on all the time, new programmers, new opinions. And, of course, we have Tom Hartman and these other syndicated people,
yep.
Amy Goodman. But we don't have the largest radio audience in the city, probably. But we have listeners who listen all over the world since we're on the web. And I agree with you on trying to improve what we do and how we do it and the diversity we offer.
Well, you probably need more resources so you can promote the radio station's programming
right.
all over the place and
right.
so on. So I'd say to your listeners, give money to WSLR.
That's a good idea. In fact, we twice a year we try to tell people that, and then they do. 80,000 at least every 6 months. We're well supported. We've been defunded by the city county commission for our views. They know that we're vaguely left of center, and they took away $2,000 or $3,000. I forget recently from our normal grant, and but we'll make it up. We don't mind. You're right. We're on the ball here. We're trying, and I think if people listen to this in other countries, in other states, they should seek out not only our station but the local. The non-profit low-power FM stations, which are
I couldn't hear that.
I'm
go
sorry.
Ahead.
People should seek out their non-profit low-power FM stations in their area. They're usually quite progressive, and labor unions, religious or institutions, or people like us. Okay, well, we got about 5 minutes left. Any final thoughts?
Well, I think it's important that people not lose
hope.
Fall into cynicism or a sense that it's impossible to win or whatever.
Good.
In 2019, John Meacham, a great historian,
yes,
wrote a book called The Soul of America, The
yes.
Struggle for Our Better Angels.
Yes.
And in promotional material for that book, he writes that about the Civil War, Reconstruction, the birth of the Lost Cause, the backlash against immigrants in the First World War, the resurgence of the Ku Klux Klan in the 20s, the fight for women's rights, the demagoguery of guys like Huey Long and Father Coughlin, the America First movement during World War II, the anti-Jim Crow, anti-communist witch hunts of McCarthy, Jim Crow.
Mm-hmm.
Each of those episodes, he points out, international life, have been shaped by a contest to lead the country, to look forward rather than back, to assert hope over fear, a struggle, that he says continues today. And as he says, let me just quote this, while the American story has not always or even often been heroic,
mm-hmm.
we have been sustained by the belief in progress, even in the gloomiest of times.
Mm-hmm.
In his inspiring book, Meacham assures us, the good news is we have come through such darkness before, as time and time again, Lincoln's better angels have found a way to prevail. And now I think it's our turn to continue that battle for America's better angels and be convinced, absolutely convinced, that together, with unity, we can win.
Thank you very much. Well said, Robert Kramer, the author of Nuts and Bolts, The Formula for Progressive Electoral Success. And that's where we're going to be heading for in 2 years. And we're working on our end. And thank you for working on your end, Bob. And
all right, brother. Good to talk with you always.
All right. See you later. Bye-bye. Lisa, what do you think? I should have brought you in a little sooner. What did you think?
I think it was fantastic, Tom. I think that we have a lot of work to do in terms of getting a support for progressive ideas. And I loved when he ended it talking about our better angels.
Yes.
I think that was the best part of the show.
Well, I hope we still have better angels. I believe in them, and we're trying here at WSLR, and we hope our listeners will continue to support us and other people like us, and speak up against any tyranny, anything that infringes on our liberties and our freedom. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! In 2 minutes. Amy Goodman is one of my favorite places to find world and national news. She's amazing. And she's spoken here in Sarasota several times. Maybe we can have her back again. She's quite something. I guess we could just play just a little bit of music now, waiting for Amy. Thank you all for listening. Tom Walker here for Peace and Justice Report every Wednesday. Bob will be back next week, Bob Connors, Wednesdays from 9 to 10 a.m. And thank you, Lisa, for helping out on the boards, and good luck with your show.
In the beginning, long time ago, in the beginning,
in the beginning.
In the beginning.